This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Holiday shopping stories used to be about Furbies and the latest video game console. But it's the 2020s, the climate is going haywire, and the economy is undergoing a major realignment, so the stories are a little different this year. Open up the Mercury News, and the story about Christmas tree prices is actually about extreme weather events, kinks in the global supply chain, and the pandemic. We'll be talking about the new factors in holiday shopping and what they say about how the U.S. economy is working right now. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. For some Americans at the top of the economic heap, the pandemic has been a boon. Galloping stock market, reduced household spending, and increased government assistance led people to build up $2 trillion worth of savings. That's given retailers hope for record holiday spending. At the same time, the pandemic hit lower-income Americans hard, and the government stimulus that kept many families afloat has dwindled. So that's the complex demand side. But the supply around these holidays this year is also disrupted. From the factories in China through the whole shipping business and onward. Because of that constrained supply and ample demand, companies have raised their prices, which when viewed from high altitude, we call inflation. And that's squeezing the very people who were hit hardest by the pandemic. Yet despite all that, most big companies are reporting huge profits, much bigger than in 2019. And this week, the FTC even opened an investigation into how large firms may be benefiting from shortages. That's the macro side, which we're going to get to. But to start today, I wanted to go very specific. We're joined today by Emily Durie to talk about her story in the San Jose Mercury News about Christmas trees. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thanks for having me on.
So you had a classic newspaper story assigned to you. Go to the Christmas tree lot and talk to some folks. But the story that you produced was not only that. What did you find when you started talking to people who were there selling trees?
We found that Christmas trees this year are more expensive. That's sort of the top line. And then we got into a little bit about why and found that climate change has posed problems. So there was flooding in Canada, which is a major exporter of trees. A lot of our trees come from Oregon, which was hit with a heat wave back in the summer that damaged some trees. So the supply is an issue. And then we also heard about trucking problems and, log jams at ports, and it just sort of spirals from there. But the upshot is that trees are a lot more this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wanted to just dilate for a moment on the climate change aspect. I mean, over the summer, I think people probably remember that there was this massive, heat dome over the Pacific Northwest. And that had this sort of knock-on effect all the way down at kind of Christmas time. Then we had these, massive atmospheric river up in British Columbia, which then had this effect here. And there were also the fires in California also hit some farms as well, right?
Yes, exactly. There's a type of tree called the silver tip that comes from sort of the High Sierra. And they were damaged in the fires. And so people who are looking for that type of tree are having trouble finding them. And when they are finding them, they're much more expensive than they were last year.
Yeah. On the logistics side, is the main problem basically you can't find the truckers to actually bring things down from Oregon to California?
That's a huge part of the problem. The tree sellers that I was talking to were saying that trucking was, double what it normally is. And truckers, that's one piece of the problem. But then the other issue is literally finding like the truck chassis. And so, yeah, trucking is a huge issue. And then I talked to the head of Balsam Hill, which is based in Redwood City, and they sell artificial trees, and those sort of go all over the country. But they are having to pay fines at the ports because they can't find the truckers to transport the trees. And they obviously don't want to be paying those fines, but they just can't find truckers.
It's funny, when I was first doing work on logistics some years ago, I never thought that so many people would be talking about truck chassis like ever in my life. But it is. It's a huge problem. And it's funny, people have known it's a problem for a while, but it just the negative impacts hadn't been felt throughout the whole economy. I guess it kind of comes to this, though. There are these increased costs for various companies, whether it's the people who run the Christmas tree lot or the people who make the artificial trees that you talk to. But they kind of have a choice, right? They could either eat some of those costs or they can pass them on to consumers. So what did you hear from the Christmas tree lot operators about sort of that decision making?
I think they're passing on some of the costs, and they acknowledge that. I think you have some of these small sort of family tree lots that they're not making huge profits. And so they're saying they need to pass on some of those costs. I also think the reality is families are willing to shell out for Christmas trees. I mean, if you trek out with your kids and your dog and whatever, and you're at the tree lot and you all of a sudden notice that the price is up.
Sorry, kids, no Christmas tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's a tough sell. Right.
Right. You're not necessarily turning around and packing back into the car. So they know they have sort of this captive audience. And, I'm not a marketer, but people talk about nostalgia, and I think that's pretty powerful. So the tree sellers definitely have that on their side.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Emily Dury, reporter with the Mercury News. Check out her story on why your Christmas trees are more expensive this year. Thanks so much, Emily.
Thank you.
So today we're talking about inflation and disruption in the global supply chain, how it's affecting the holidays, and what people out there, what you can do so it doesn't spoil your holiday season. We want to hear from you about a couple of different things. First, is this show on right now in your retail shop? We'd love to hear how the holiday season is going for you out there in the retail world. And if you're just a holiday shopper, I know not everyone is, but if you are, we were told 3 months ago that we should start shopping because of supply chain problems. Did you do that? And if you did, do you regret it? Do you think it was necessary? And if you're just starting now, are you finding that you're not able to get the things that you want? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. If you're a retailer, you're sitting there in your shop right now, give us a call. You can also get in touch Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, KQED Forum, or you can just kind of email your experience to forum@kqed.org. I want to introduce our other guests for today. We're joined by Michelle Singletary, who's a personal finance columnist at The Washington Post, and she writes the nationally syndicated personal finance column, The Color of Money. Welcome, Michelle.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We're also joined by Catherine Russ. I'm going to call her Katie. She's the associate professor of economics at UC Davis. And from 2015, 2016, she was a senior economist for the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. Welcome, Dr. Russ.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Dr. Russ, I want to start with you. You're an economist. When you look at the American economy right now, like, what do you see? Like, what's kind of different from what you might have expected, 10 years ago?
Well, for a long time, we had what we call slack in the economy, kind of just sort of a little bit of sclerotic or not very strong demand. And so central banks were actually having a hard time helping the economy hit their 2% inflation target. And this was not just in the US, but worldwide. And now suddenly you see 6.1% inflation compared to a year ago. So things have really changed.
And is that as a result, in my mind, I think of inflation like when we talk about it in this way, as being about the Federal Reserve. Like that's how people kind of talk about it, right? Like how much money are the central banks kind of pumping into the economy? But it seems like there's emerging ideas that maybe there's other things that should be investigated when we're talking about inflation.
Oh, sure. So there's the real side. And when you hit capacity constraints or supply constraints and demand is still increasing, then that pushes up prices. Mm-hmm. And so what you see right now is a really interesting case of inflation. I hate to call it interesting where people are feeling squeezed and so mm-hmm. forth. As an economist, we're the dismal science. So, but it is an interesting case because what we see is that household disposable income has actually increased more than inflation over the past 2 years. So we've had these rescue packages, these stimulus packages to help us get through the crisis of the pandemic, to help keep the economy going. And so that's really buoying demand in a way that you have this demand-led inflation. Now it is intersecting with the supply side, and your guest, Emily Drury, just described some of the supply side issues as well for Christmas trees, and there are supply side issues across various sectors of the economy. So those are combining, but we have to think of the inflation, the shortages, as first and foremost really driven by changes in our preference for goods over services during the pandemic, mm-hmm. but then also buoyed by the federal stimulus, which is pumping money into everyone's bank accounts, or was. You're right, it's tapering off now.
Yeah. Michelle Singletary, you write about personal finance. Just want to give you a chance to talk about when you're talking with people out there with the supply chain problems, what are the big kind of categories that are really hurting people in their finances?
Well, I think, you know, the cost of food, for one, going to the grocery store is much more expensive. People are home more. And so if you've got a parent, you've got kids, you know that they're eating more because they're home more. You're not out and about like you normally would be. If you need a new car or a used car, even just let's focus on used car prices are up tremendously, more than that 6% inflation rate. And so people looking to, you know, save money on a car are having trouble. And even though the stimulus payments and the child tax payments are there, those are all temporary. And so going into the new year, many people are worried, you know, how am I going to make it now, particularly if you still had income disruption. Maybe you or your partner or both of you, and you're still struggling to catch up from job losses that maybe now you're employed, but you had a lot of bills that you couldn't cover while you weren't working.
Yeah. It is one of those strange things because this was such a bifurcated recovery, right? I mean, some people really didn't lose jobs, their businesses didn't shut down, and other people, it was just devastating.
It was definitely, this pandemic has shown us the haves and have-nots. The haves did extremely well. If you had money in the market, now, you know, recently this past week or so, you know, the market has been down quite a bit. But overall, since the pandemic started, if you had money in the market, you had money in a retirement account, and you were maxing out, you did tremendously well. Your wealth increased exponentially. However, on the other side of that, this pandemic showed how fragile so many people were. Now, they were always fragile, but there were so many other people doing so well and doing okay that we kind of forgot that group of people. And now we realize it was just right in our faces that, hey, this is an America where there are lots of people who are barely getting by. And this pandemic really pushed them over the edge.
Yeah. We're talking about how inflation, disruption in the global supply chain is affecting this holiday season. We're joined by Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post, and Catherine Russ, associate professor of economics at UC Davis. And we do want to hear from you. Is this show on in your retail shop? We'd love to hear how the holiday season is going. Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about this holiday season, shopping, and what it all says about how our economy is working right now. We're joined by Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post, and Katie Russ, associate professor of economics at UC Davis. And from 2015 to 2016, she was a senior economist for the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. And we want to hear from you. You remember a couple months ago, there were all these stories about how you needed to do your holiday shopping earlier because of supply chain disruptions. Did you do that? Or did you not? And how do you feel about that decision now? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, KQED Forum. We're doing a lot of stuff on Instagram now. And you can email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. I want to add in Laura from San Carlos into our discussion. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks. And I want to preface my comments by just saying I'm really fortunate that I could absorb these increases in costs. Mm-hmm. I definitely shopped early, primarily for the children in my life. And what I found is not only is there a lack of availability of some of the items, but when they are available, I have seen 30% minimum jump in prices. And I just got back from the grocery store, and just looking at basics, easily a 20 to 25% increase. And so that's why we're really upping our donations to the food banks in our community. But I think this is a really tough time at the holiday times. And so thank you for letting me comment, and I'll take any additional comments off the air.
Those are great suggestions. We've definitely been hearing that as well. There's some stories on KQED.org about sort of how you can make your holiday donation dollars go as far as possible if you have them. So you can check those out. Dr. Russ, I wanted to go to you on this one first. Which is, you know, we know prices are rising, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, just this week, the Federal Trade Commission, which has a new head in Lina Khan, launched an investigation into kind of the relationship between big business and shortages. And what do we know about that relationship, right? I mean, like, it's not like prices just automatically go up. Somebody has to raise those prices. And what do we know about that, like how that happens?
So most people have experienced unavailability of items like your caller just mentioned just now. So surveys are showing 60, 70% of consumers are noticing some item that they went out to buy is not there, and they have to choose a different item or get by. In terms of what we know about market power of big companies, food presents an interesting example. Your caller was talking about the basics in her food shopping. The prices have risen 20, 25%. And that is the case across the board if we look at meat. So meat, the prices have risen much faster than the prices of food overall, which have risen 5% or 5.3% over the past year. So we can take a look at that and say, well, the meat packing industry is really dominated by just a few firms that process about 80% of the meat for the entire country. And so that leads you to start thinking, okay, what role is market power playing? It's not necessarily that companies have gotten greedier. It's just that these increased demand conditions, as Michelle Singletary said, is people are buying more food for home. And so they're buying more meat packaged for home. Does that allow producers to, increase their margins somewhat?
Right. I mean, it's basically the idea is that the more concentrated market power big firms have in a particular thing, like you're saying in this sort of packaged meat, then the more power they have to drive up prices, regardless of the supply problems that might be behind there. Right. I mean, they have some flexibility in setting prices.
Yeah, absolutely. On the flip side, they've also had monopsony power in the labor markets, meaning they've had some power over setting wages. Mm-hmm. And so with the labor shortages that we're seeing across the economy, that increases workers' bargaining power relative to the firms. So while they have increased power on the pricing side, you're actually seeing workers take back some more of their bargaining power that's been eroded over the last few decades in this tight labor market, which is very interesting.
Michelle Singletary, I wanted to go to you. What are you seeing on that side of things, on people able to, get better jobs, trade up jobs, or to in their workplaces negotiate better conditions and wages? Are you seeing that too, in addition to the sort of rising prices out there in the stores?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. If you are don't have a college education or just a high school degree, it's harder to negotiate. But people who have more education, more experience, are able to get employers to pay them more because it's much more competitive at that level. And, you know, it's really interesting because my son just graduated and he's been applying he's still looking for jobs and he's been applying and he's been turned down from a lot of retailers. And I get probably why. He's got a math degree and they're thinking this kid isn't going to stay around for very long. So it's very interesting when I hear employers say, oh, we can't find anybody. You know, he would have been working for them for 6 months. And then he's still looking. He's hobbled together some part-time jobs. So really, it depends on the industry, how much your job experience is in demand. But we are also finding that there's something called the Great Resignation, where people are saying, you know what? I'm done. I can't take this anymore. Bad bosses. And so lots of people are retiring early. You know, 55 really is early, about 10 years early for the average person, because they're just saying, you know, the pandemic, I was home. I didn't have this long commute. And I think I can get by with the money that I save, because, of course, this group of people also had money in the market. And so the labor market is just all over the place. People still can't get good living wages. There's some people who can negotiate higher wages. And then there's some people who are saying, I quit. I want to do something else. And those jobs go unfilled because they can't find people for them.
It really does seem, and we're going to bring in Anita from Sacramento in a second here, but it really does seem to me like the labor market right now is so jumbled. Like there are so many mismatches between both geographically where the jobs are, skill sets, and many other things. Totally, totally fascinating. Anita from Sacramento, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, I guess I just wanted to be a little bit of a contrarian. I've been hearing about all the lack of things available for Christmas, including my Christmas tree. Well, at least here at my small family nursery in Sacramento, I paid the exact same for a silver tip this year that I did last year. There was less availability, but I was able to find something. I was able to get something for everyone on my Christmas list. Yeah, there is a few less things, but, you know, there's plenty out there. You want a shirt? There's a shirt. Maybe not the exact one you were looking for, but there's a shirt. You want toys? They're there. The stores are full. Amazon is full. We're so used to being able to get whatever we want, whenever we want, at the price we want. I think we're a little spoiled. I just personally haven't seen it. I'm not saying that others haven't had difficulties, but if we're a little flexible, I don't think it's going to be a bad holiday.
Yeah, Anita, I have to say that reflects my experience as well. No, there's no shortage of companies trying to sell me things right now.
Exactly.
What do you think, Catherine Russ? Do you think that there's just that the supply chain problems are sort of there for individual products, but kind of across the board, it's not as if the shelves are empty right now?
Yes, I think people really have memories of early in the pandemic when there were some more widespread shortages and more severe shortages, and they're kind of bracing themselves, hungering down for that, as though that is happening right now. But that really isn't. It's more sporadic shortages. Sometimes these shortages are hitting critical goods like medical devices, and in this case, it's really serious. But in general, they're quite idiosyncratic. They're sporadic.
Yeah. You know, and I wonder, you know, you've written about that these shortages may actually be sort of not letting us see some of the good things that are actually happening in the economy right now.
It's true. So because the inflation is demand driven, by and large, the flip side of it is this tightening labor market that we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Singletary is absolutely right. You know, some people have not been benefiting from this recovery as much as we hope. And that's why we really need to keep it running hot. So right now, if we look at wage growth for the lowest earning workers, so the lowest earning quarter of workers, that wage growth is far outpacing wage growth for other workers in the economy. And it has hit its highest level since the Great Recession hit. So if, you know, it's not quite matching inflation. So that's, you know, that's a problem. But it makes you wonder, if we just let this run a little longer, you know, will we start seeing some of the convergence so that some of the people that have been forgotten may actually, you know, benefit from this expansion?
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I think Dr. Russ made such a great point that we do need to look at the upside. But when we talk about wage growth for the lowest workers, let's remember, we're talking about they were coming from a pretty low bottom too, right? I mean, so when you look at percentage growth, yeah, it's great, except it was still pretty low to begin with. And then also a lot of times, you know, they might have higher wages, but then they pull back on their hours, or they have higher wages, but they still don't have health care or other benefits, sick leave. So, you know, a lot of businesses like, yeah, we're paying people more, except, yeah, you're taking away other stuff or it wasn't on the table to begin with. You know, especially when it comes to healthcare, our healthcare is connected to a good job. You don't have a good job, you don't have good healthcare or healthcare at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Catherine Russ, I mean, I think one of the things this really brings up is to give that context, which was basically stagnant wage growth for the bottom of the economic pyramid, while the top was running away with more and more and more money, right?
Absolutely. So I completely agree with Michelle Singletary. I mean, we are still failing workers in so many ways, but this is the first sign I've seen that we're actually, you know, making some sacrifices in a way to try to elevate the conditions for these lowest earning workers. I mean, it's really unusual that you would see the Federal Reserve Bank not start raising interest rates right away if we saw inflation of 6.1%. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, the slowing of the economy, it immediately affects the lowest earning workers first. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, why is the Fed letting the economy run hot? Why are we risking this inflation? And I think the answer as to why that might be worthwhile is to at least try to encourage this momentum that we do see for the lowest earning workers, which, as she absolutely rightly said, have been really shortchanged in our economy.
Yeah. Let's bring in caller Daniel from San Jose. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I was over at the Valley Fair Mall the other day and, you know, doing some holiday shopping, and one of the stores had actually installed like this big 3D printer thing. Like, and it was so cool. And I walked in because I was like, I asked the staff, like, why do you have this thing? It's like a kid's art studio. And they were telling me like some of their shipments from, I think it was South Korea, were getting delayed, and they're using this machine to kind of 3D print toys for kids while they're waiting for their shipments. So I was curious, like, you know, are we seeing kind of a resurgence of maybe like onshoring manufacturing, or, you know, is this kind of like a stopgap phenomenon? It was really cool, and I wanted to get the folks' perspective.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, Daniel. I mean, that must have been much faster than my 3D printer, which the sort of at-home 3D printers tend to be pretty slow. Dr. Russ, what do you think? Are we seeing, you know, in the sort of macro level numbers, kind of a return of onshore manufacturing?
So we can say that industrial production does not seem, I mean, I know that different manufacturers are suffering because of the shortages, but if we look at industrial production overall, it is, you know, it is bouncing back. It does look resilient. So that may include some of these onshoring activities. We've noticed onshoring activities occurring since the Great Recession for a number of different reasons. I think it's hard to know whether firms will make investments or whether workers will make investments to retrain and so forth in response to some of these demand shortages, these supply shortages and increases in domestic demand, because we don't know how long they will last. And so sometimes there are big upfront costs to changing your technology, starting to produce a new product, starting to train to get a trucking license. And we just don't know how long this increase in demand for goods that are right here, right now will last.
Yeah. We're talking about the holiday shopping season and how it reflects our current quite strange economic condition here in the United States. We're joined by Catherine Russ, Associate Professor of Economics at UC Davis, and Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post, who also writes the nationally syndicated personal finance column, The Color of Money. We've had some great comments come in. Just want to read some of those to you. Stephen writes, "The retail store I work at has been hitting some days and beating on some other days our 2019 numbers, while having 10% all the way down to 40% less customer traffic. Our district manager informs us that East Coast districts have been beating their 2019 numbers most of the year, and all of this with way less inventory and staff." I would editorialize that's one of the reasons that large companies are having good profit numbers right now. Brad writes, and there's a few of these, want to go through them. Brad writes, "The past week I tried to take advantage of big online sales, but I found many of my desired products were out of stock. It's a blessing in disguise, as I'll end up going to my local downtown to complete most of my holiday shopping. Our local retailers can use the support." And, you know, Remy, along similar lines, wants to say, "There is no supply chain problem when it comes to local artists and artisans' work. It's not such a bad thing if you have to forego the anonymously and perhaps problematically made Amazon item. Support our local creatives." Michelle Singletary, is that one of the pieces of advice that you're giving to people who might be squeezed for money, is to kind of be open to substituting from, you know, the big flashy brand name thing to a locally made product or other thing?
Absolutely. So my advice is divided. If you're still struggling, or you're not fully funding your retirement account, you don't have that emergency fund, then you need to pull back anyway. I know you're thinking about, oh, what's going to happen to the macroeconomy? Listen, that's not your issue right now. Let Dr. Ross worry about that. You need to save your money. However, if you did well and you've got all this pent-up demand and you've covered all those bases, you're saving for retirement, you got a savings, your kids got a college fund, all the kind of things like that, you know, I think you do a mix. You buy from big box and local. We need both. There's a balance. It's life is, in general, is about balance. And I think one thing we learned is that we need to bring manufacturing back to our shores. Yes, participate in, you know, global economy, but also local economy. I'm finding this myself. I had a number of things that I wanted to do, you know, get some T-shirts and stuff made. And I went on Etsy and it was just wonderful to deal with that platform. And I also go to the big stores. So I try to do a mix. I also shop with people who look like me. I'm African-American. I mean, just think about how you're using your money and how you can contribute to the economy. And we all will be lifted up if we do that. And I think that's what this pandemic has told us. We can't only rely on goods coming from overseas. We can't only rely on big box stores. Just balance out. And one last thing, you all, we have got to get off of this train that everything has to be dirt cheap. You know, we can't pay people what we've been paying them. And that may mean those of us who can afford it need to not always be trying to look for, you know, a shirt that costs a dollar. That person making that shirt can't live off of that. And so, yeah, you might have to pay $5 or $6 for that shirt. And you ought to be happy about that, because that means some other family and somewhere in this country can feed their family and send their kids to college.
Thank you. That was Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post. We're also joined by Katie Russ, Associate Professor of Economics at UC Davis. We're talking about how the holiday shopping season kind of reflects the strange state of the American economy. And we want to hear from you. How's this going for you, either in your retail shop or in your shopping? The number here is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more Forum after the break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about this holiday shopping season, the American economy, rising prices, stocks getting low. We're joined by Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post, and Katie Russ, an associate professor of economics at UC Davis. Want to add in Adrienne from Sebastopol into our conversation. Welcome.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us.
I am such a longtime fan of Michelle Singletary. I'm just excited to be on the phone at the same time that she is. And she's featured in my local paper. She's a woman. She's a woman of color. Her point of view is so important. And I read her columns all the time and just really, really learn so much from her.
Oh, that's so nice, Michelle. That's got to feel good to hear.
I'm a grandmother and a mother, and I just want to say I do shop locally mostly and make gifts. And, of course, this is a good time to think about, you know, things not being as important as experiences. And so I love to give to my family opportunities or masks. Opportunities. As an example, I got my sister a pair of binoculars, and that's opened up a whole world to her of animals and birds in the sky. And so some gifts can be fun and functional, and those are the kind I love to give to my family.
That's so great, Adrian. Thank you so much. Michelle, you want to say anything? Just as you know, we know you have a big fan on the phone.
Much. I love it. You just made my day. And I can co-sign on what she just said. In fact, for my sister's birthday, which just happened, I gave her a subscription to like an aqua fitness class where you do a bike in the water. And I signed her up for that. And so that's exactly what she's talking about. You know, for the holidays, you know, think outside of the box of what else that you could do. If you've got someone in your family who's got a bunch of kids, and I know it sounds like so trite, and we say this all the time, you know, give them, you know, babysitting coupons. But as a parent who had three children, I would have killed if someone had said, let me take your kid for a couple of days. So I love that idea.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much, Adrian.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You know, Katie Russ, question there around like sort of the experiences versus products. Does this actually show up in economic numbers, this idea that, you know, it seems, I think you said earlier that there's actually been during the pandemic, because people were stuck at home, they actually couldn't spend money on services and experiences, and instead were spending more money on kind of just products.
Yes, you saw this huge shift in demand toward goods away from services. And now that's starting to converge back. We still see some slight depression in the in expenditures on services compared to what they were before the pandemic, but it is rising back to trend. And I can just speak, you know, from my own family's point of view, we're doing the same thing. We're really thinking after the shock of the pandemic and the big burdens that it put on our entire society, you know, what's important to us, what's good for our environment. And we're rethinking how we're doing Christmas. We're focusing on experiences. And also, we're all going to a flea market to just, you know, get our stuff there.
I love a good flea market. We're talking about the holiday shopping season, how it reflects the American economy and what people are doing about it. We're joined by Katie Russ, an associate professor of economics at UC Davis, and Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post. And we've been loving hearing from you and how your shopping habits have or have not changed this season. And we also want to hear from some retail shops. We'd love to hear how the holiday season's going for you. Number's 866-733-6786, or you can get in touch Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or the email address is forum@kqed.org. And we do have a retail shop on the line. Tara from San Francisco, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, tell us what it's been like for you to own a toy store at this particular holiday shopping season.
Well, we've been planning really far in advance, knowing that manufacturing and shipping delays were going to happen. So, you know, back in June, started thinking about the holidays, and also being short-staffed, like everyone, that's been a challenge. But despite these things, we've, you know, pivoted and found new brands that maybe are a little bit more local. A lot of our merchandise comes from Europe, so we knew that was going to be a challenge. And, you know, despite all these things, we have a stock store, two stores, actually.
Can you talk a little bit about getting things from Europe? You know, a lot of the discussion here on the West Coast, but also nationally, has been about the troubles, you know, down in L.A. Long Beach with the things coming from Asia over to the U.S. Did you find the same things were true on the East Coast ports that are accepting stuff from Europe?
Yes. I mean, a lot of these things usually arrive in a couple of weeks, and it's taking more like a couple of months. And, you know, the companies they're coming from, they know these things are happening. So they telling us to order early. So if we want it by December, you know, again, ordering over the summer and setting ship dates. So, you know, I'd say about half these things have arrived. And then the other issue is that, you know, for small retailers like myself, we're ordering so ahead of schedule that we're having having to pay a lot out of pocket much earlier than we're selling these things. So you have a real discrepancy between, you know, cash flow and knowing that you'll sell them, but not for a few months. So even more important, you know, to support your small businesses. I know we all say this all the time. It's still the case.
How are you sort of managing the cash flow problems? I actually have totally been curious about this because we, you know, you're carrying that inventory for much longer.
Well, one way is, and not on purpose, but having less staff. I've been trying to hire for several months, and it's been really challenging. So for me, keeping my payroll down has been somewhat helpful, although challenging in other ways, of course. And I would just say really, you know, kind of I've reached out to some vendors saying, you know, can we push this to this date? And, you know, it's just it's a lot of back end work, basically. But now that the holidays are here and people are out shopping, which has been amazing, and ordering online because we also have a website, you know, it's starting to help. But there's it's been a stressful, I'd say, I mean, obviously a couple years now, but at least in the last like 4 months or so, just getting through this.
Two more quick questions. On the worker side, what have you tried to do to kind of incentivize people to stick with the job, like stay in it? And what have you done to try and like recruit new people? I mean, is it just a matter of kind of raising the hourly wage?
Which I have done for full-time employees. I also offer health insurance, which I thought would be, you know, a lot more helpful than it has been. But yeah, raising the hourly wage, and I just, you know, usually have found people from a sign on the door or on social media. I've tried school, like Handshake, you know, posting on different colleges. And of course, like Indeed, Craigslist, all these things. And I think it's just, people aren't looking, or maybe, you know, it's sort of a niche business. I mean, it's a toy store, so things in here aren't necessarily for the people working here, which might be a little challenging unless you have kids. But yeah, I'm hoping in the new year it'll be a little bit easier. But
we so appreciate you sharing your experience with us, Tara. This is really great. What part of town is your store in?
So I have my shop in Noe Valley, which has been here for 7 years, and I just opened a new location on Sacramento Street across town in Presidio Heights.
Oh,
so
man.
I've got two locations.
Oh, that's great. Well, glad to hear things are going well, and we really do super appreciate that you're
Of course. I appreciate you having this conversation. It's important.
Cool. All right, Tara, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks.
I want to hear just right back-to-back from Eric in Alameda, who is a game store owner, another store owner. We want to hear how things are going for you, Eric.
So we're seeing, you know, larger sales than we saw in 2019. 2020 was just a disaster for us, but numbers have increased quite a bit. We're seeing as much as, you know, our averages are as much as 120% of 2019.
Huh.
Expenses are through the roof, though, so, you know, it hasn't made an appreciable difference on profitability, but we're seeing, you know, much better sales numbers.
What are the expenses that are up for you?
Well, healthcare, always. Just like the previous caller, we provide healthcare for our full-time employees. You know, there's always, of course, the personal protective equipment, the price of getting the product is increased quite a bit as well. All services, everything is just more expensive.
Yeah. And are you having trouble finding workers, or is a game store the kind of place where there's a person who wants to work there and they really want to work there?
Yeah, typically we haven't had too much issue with that. We do, of course, go through a decent interview process, and we want to make sure that someone is, you know, the right fit for the store. But no, we haven't had too much trouble. Now, we're in Berkeley, which has second highest minimum wage in the Bay Area, and maybe the third highest in the nation right now. Mm-hmm. And we paid above and beyond that. We paid 10% hazard pay throughout the pandemic to all of our on-site staff, and We've kind of carried that through.
Yeah.
But hiring hasn't really been an issue. Product, of course, has been kind of a thing. And we started stocking up back in April because we saw that the supply chain issues were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And this is stuff that we normally don't purchase until August or September. So we were full to the rafters already in the summer when a lot of toy and game manufacturers started warning their customers to start stocking up. It's been crazy, but we've got lots of product.
Well, that is excellent. Thank you, Eric. We in my family appreciate your Pokemon cards and other games. Thank you so much. I wanted to go back to you, Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at the Washington Post. You know, you've kind of been hearing some of the local business owners. Is that kind of what you're hearing sort of more broadly about how people are sort of managing to adjust on the local level?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the business owners that are going to succeed have made changes. I mean, you heard him talk about paying, instituting a hazard pay, which I think is phenomenal. And that probably has meant less revenue and thus income for the business owner. And that says a lot about that person and how they're running their business. Offering health care is huge, and it is a huge cost, but it also means that you are able to bring in people and possibly keep them. Hopefully, the less turnover you have, the better for your business. And so for some owners, it may mean taking a little less for themselves for the greater good of the business and their employees. And I just, I commend those small business owners who are trying to take those steps to keep people, help them, their employees, families, because they're all connected.
Thank you so much. Peggy from San Anselmo, welcome to the show.
Hi. My question, comment is, I'm wondering how much corporate protection of its profit margins is contributing to inflation. It seems a little disingenuous sometimes to make it seem as if higher wages are the problem with inflation, that more people can buy more things. The stock market's at a record high. So how much is that protection of profit margins contributing to this?
Yeah. And Stephen, just to piggyback on that comment, and then I'm going to throw it to you, Dr. Russ. Stephen writes, if prices are rising at the same time employers are being forced to increase wages, perhaps the cause of inflation is that rich owners and stockholders are unwilling to reduce their profit margins. What do you think is going on there, Dr. Russ?
Well, corporate profits are up more than 20% since the end of 2019, so right before the pandemic hit the US, and wages have not been quite keeping up with inflation. So you can do the math there.
And, you were on the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. What's the policy answer to that? I mean, is there one?
So the administration is really taking a careful and I think well-informed line on this. I know there's a push in some quarters to, crush the big corporations and all of this, but what the administration's doing is trying to think about how to encourage competition, how to encourage entry. So that erodes the power of corporations to increase prices when demand is high at times like this. So they're really taking a very carefully considered stance. You have to be careful that you don't discourage investment. And I don't want to, I don't want to just push that as a knee-jerk talking point or anything. But, once investment starts collapsing, it's really hard to sustain an economic recovery. And that's part of what is buoying wage growth for that lowest group of earners in the economy. So it's this very careful balance. And I appreciate the way that they're really going at it by thinking about encouraging competition and also improving infrastructure. Because when infrastructure erodes, it's harder to transport goods. It's more expensive to transport goods. And that really affects small businesses and new entrants.
Yeah. It's just so interesting. It just feels to me like there's been this kind of sea change on the way that economists are thinking about inflation that is actually a huge deal. Well, in fact, like, since something that's, you know, it feels like there's been one view on inflation for like 40 years, and now suddenly everything has kind of like shifted.
Well, I don't know if it's shifted or if we're just getting a broader set of voices weighing in on the issue. So the Biden administration has brought in a much broader set of voices to weigh in on economic policy than we might have seen in previous administrations. So I think this is really filtering through into their policy strategy.
Yeah. You know, last listener comment here. Michelle writes, I have definitely seen prices go up in our big chain grocery stores, but for that reason, I'm grateful for discount, outlet, and dollar stores where prices have not gone up. I am surprised that these places are not packed. Plus, these places sell produce, organic food items, toys, and holiday decor. Michelle Singletary, I wanted to give you the last word. Have you got any last little short tips for the audience on, you know, saving money in the holiday season?
Well, I think the first thing is that you set a budget, and no one wants to hear that. It's so boring, but I'm telling you, budgeting is the key to everything. And I like to say I have two loves in my life, my budget and my boo, my husband of 30 years. I love them both. I'm not so sure which one more than the other, but you know, that's the key. So if you, wherever you are, until policy catches up to those who can't make it. So if you're not making enough or you're making too much, you still have to budget. So as you holiday shop, start with what you can afford first before you step foot in a store or click on any link for any item. What can I afford? And how do you determine that? Is go back to what I said earlier in the show. Are you saving for your retirement? Do you have an emergency fund? Do you have something what I call a life happens fund? So that if your car breaks down or your washing machine or your kid breaks something, you can replace that and fix it. You know, are you giving, right? This is the season and time that we think about giving to other folks, but how about nonprofits, you know, NPR, all of build that into your budget.
Thanks for the shout out, Michelle.
but that's really, really key, right? And so when you start with all of that, and then if you can be generous, go and do and be generous. And if you can't, don't be embarrassed. Don't worry about that. Because what we learned from the pandemic, most of all, is that it was about people's presence, not the presence.
Oh, thank you. We've been talking about holiday shopping with Michelle Singletary, personal finance column at The Washington Post, and Katie Russ, a professor at UC Davis. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour ahead.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way, from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.